Okay, I think we can start. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to this session about authentication and authorization in Microsoft SharePoint 2013. My name is Paolo Pialorsi, and here you can find my email address and my Twitter account. Please let me introduce myself briefly before starting with the real content of the session. I'm a consultant focused on SharePoint since 2001. I'm a Microsoft Certified Solution Master on SharePoint. And during my life, I wrote several books for Microsoft Press about their Microsoft technologies. The latest one is the SharePoint 2013 Developer Reference that you can find in the O'Reilly bookstore in the expo area. And maybe someone lucky will be able to win a copy during this session. Okay, so let's move to the real content of this session. And let's talk about the agenda. We will start talking about the authentication infrastructure of SharePoint 2013 from a user perspective as well as from an app perspective. And in particular, we will focus our attention on the claim-based mode available in SharePoint 2013. And we will see how to federate SharePoint with an external identity provider, which in our case will be Windows Azure ACS with Facebook under the cover. Then we will also see what is a custom claim provider to support the usage of a custom identity provider with custom claims provided to SharePoint. Later, we will move to the authorization topics, and we will see how it works the user authentication as well as the app's authentication. Because someone already asked me such a question, the agenda of this session will be about 70% for IT pros and 30% for developers, because there will be some pieces of code inside the session, not that much, but there will be also some pieces of PowerShell code, which is for both IT pros and developers, I guess, okay? So, let's move to the authentication part of the session. And first of all, let's start with the first sentence. In SharePoint 2013, the end user experience from an authentication viewpoint is almost the same as it was in SharePoint 2010. In fact, from an architectural viewpoint, we still have the so-called classic mode for authenticating users, and the classic mode allows us to authenticate Windows users with their Windows identities. And as soon as an end user will authenticate using his or her Windows identity, the result from a SharePoint perspective will be an instance of an SP user object if you look at the authentication infrastructure from a developer viewpoint and from the server object model viewpoint. On the other side, there is the so-called claims-based mode, which is the new one available since 2010, and which allows us to authenticate either Windows identities, still Windows identities, as with the classic mode, as well as users authenticated using any membership API compliant provider. That means everything which is compliant with the membership API provided by ASP.NET, and this is called usually form-based authentication or FBA. That means SQL Server users, or better, users saved inside a SQL Server database, which can be the out-of-the-box available membership SQL Server database, or can be a custom one, but also users authenticated against an LDAP provider using the LDAP membership provider. But we will have, regardless, we will authenticate Windows or FBA users, the translation of our identities into a SAML token and into an SP user, again, as it was with classic mode. Moreover, we also have support for SAML authentication, SAML 1.1 tokens, which means support for ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services, for instance, as well as access control services provided by Windows Azure, and many other identity providers compliant with the WS Federation specs and with SAML 1.1. So, the classic mode is deprecated in 2013. So keep in mind that if you have a web application, for instance, in 2010, using the classic mode, when you will have to migrate to 2013, you will have to migrate also from classic mode to claims mode, because the classic mode is available only for backward compatibility while you are migrating your web applications. And the only way to create a new web application using the classic mode in 2013 is to use PowerShell, because from the SharePoint central administration, you will not have any hide from the UI to create a classic mode authentication-based web application. Conversely, the claim-based authentication mode is the default and the only one available in the SharePoint central administration. And you should use it, because it will be the future of SharePoint and more in general of consuming hybrid solution with something on-premises, something on the cloud, and with the federation between your on-prem infrastructure and on the on-cloud infrastructure or services. So, from a claim-based perspective, let me remind you that we can authenticate anonymous users, because even an anonymous user is a kind of authentication, because you know that the user you have in front of you is anonymous, so it's a kind of authentication. So you have the anonymous access, you have the Windows one, which allows us to leverage basic NTLM or Kerberos authentication under the cover, the FBA, as I told you, as well as the trusted identity providers, which can be any of these external identity providers, as I told you before, can be Active Directory Federation Services, ACS, but also Active Directory Services provided by Windows Azure, if you use Windows Azure ACS as a proxy, or even a custom identity provider that you can develop by yourself using .NET Framework and Windows Identity Foundation. So in case of need, you can create your own identity provider and authenticate and federate your SharePoint infrastructure with an external identity provider of your own. So let me move quickly to a first demo where I will show you how SharePoint 2013 behaves from a user perspective when authenticating users. And then, step by step, we will move to the IT pro and to developer side of the world to see how we can configure these behaviors in SharePoint. So let me open my browser. This is a sample web application which provides me in the home page a custom web part which gives me some information about the currently logged in or not logged in user. Because, for instance, now I'm anonymous. This web application allows anonymous access. So here you can see my user is not authenticated. Is authenticated equals false. I don't have a username, and I don't have an authentication type because I am anonymous. Of course, I can sign in. And here, as it was in 2010, also in 2013, I have a page, which is a default page that you can customize if you want, which provides us an identity selector which allows to the end users to make a choice against the proper authentication techniques you want to use. So let's say I want to authenticate as a Windows user so far. My domain is SharePoint, my username is this one, and this is my password. And now I am authenticated. So I am a user of my SharePoint site. Here you can see in my web part that now I have a username, my user is authenticated as a value of true, and here is my identity name, which is a strange string, 0#W and something like that. Not that good, but this is my username. And through this custom web part, I have a full list of all the claims, all the information describing my digital identity as a Windows user, which is made by my username, of course, but also made by the identity provider who identified me. Somewhere here we have the claim defining the identity provider, which is Windows. But I also have all the security identifiers of the groups I belong to, as well as, in my specific scenario, I have a custom claim that I will show you later how to
configure and how to gain, which is a fidelity program level released by my custom infrastructure. And in this case, I have a gold level in my fidelity program. This is a custom claim released by a custom claim provider that I will show you later in this session. Okay? And from a claim perspective, I can authorize, we will talk about that later, we can authorize our users based on those claims. Okay? Now, let me log out and try another identity or authentication technique. Sign in again and choose, for instance, the form-based authentication. As you can see now, I have a classic FBA form with username and password. I have to provide the information to log in, and the user directory will be inside the SQL Server database in the backend. So my credentials are, I have a bad memory, so I have to copy them. Min 01, and this is my password, I guess so. Sign in. No, it isn't. One more time. Okay. Now I'm logged in with another kind of identity, which is a form-based identity. And again, if you take a look at the result in my custom web part, here you can see my username is the sample admin 01, which is the username I've used. And then I have a login name, which is different than before. It's I, column 0, hash, and something like that. Still a little bit strange. I will explain you how it works under the cover. But I'm still authenticated through a federation authentication type, and I still have my username, my identity provider, which now is Forms, and is the name of the membership provider I'm using, and then I still have my fidelity program level, which now is Silver. Okay. Last sample, just to give you the full picture, sign in again, and use an external identity provider, which can be, for instance, Windows Azure Access Control Services. Now, leveraging a cloud-based service provided to me by Microsoft, we will see more details in a few minutes about this topic, I can authenticate using Windows Live or Facebook. Let's say I want to use Facebook. Here you can see my email address and my Facebook account if you want to be my friends, okay? And let me put my password inside the login screen. And now I'm again authenticated within SharePoint as a, with an authentication type of type federation. I'm authenticated. This is my username, different again, 05.t and something like that. And I still have my fidelity program. Here it is. I'm gold again. So regardless the kind of authentication technique I use, I'm always a user from a SharePoint perspective, an SP user. I have a set of claims describing my digital identity. I can have custom claims as the fidelity program level. And my username changes while I change the authentication technique I'm using. Okay, so back to the slide deck. What is under the cover of this strange syntax for presenting the user identities and which varies based on the kind of authentication technique? As you can see, Windows FBA or SAML token change slightly one from each other. Well, let me explain you how it works under the cover, the syntax of a username, or more in general, the representation of every claim value inside SharePoint. The very first character defines if you are managing an identity claim or any other claim. If this is an identity, there is an E. If there is a C, it's any other claim. Then there is a colon as a separator and a zero, which is reserved by Microsoft so far. Then we have a claim type character, which can assume any of the available claim type encoding values which are defined inside SharePoint, which you can retrieve from SharePoint using some PowerShell scripting, or a bunch of, many various claim types. And you can configure your own claim types if you want. And for instance, in this specific example, 5 means an email claim, which in my case is an identity claim with an email address inside of it. Then we have the claim value type that can be a string on RFC 822 name. So we will have a punctuation in case of a string or a plus in the other case. We have the claim issuer, which is the subject who issued the claim. So in case of a Windows authentication, we will have a W. In case of the local STS, we will have an S, and so on. For instance, we add an F for a form-based authentication identity claim, and so on. Here you can see the full list of claim issuer available. Then there is a separator. And depending on the type of issuer, if our claim issuer is Windows or the local STS of SharePoint, you will have directly the value of your claim after the separator, after the pipe. On the contrary, if you have any other issuer, any other from Windows or local STS, you will find the name of the issuer followed by a pipe and by the value, the real value of your claim. So in this case, this identity claim describes an email address, which is the identity of a user, identified through a token service, which is based on an issuer, which is called devlib ACS. Okay? And the value, of course, is my email address. In case you are interested in going deeper on this topic, you can find the SharePoint protocols on the network. You can search for them. And there are a bunch of documents describing all this stuff with a great detail. So far, we have seen the story from the authentication perspective and from mainly the end-user perspective and from the IT pro perspective. We understood how it works, the representation and the syntax under the cover of a claim value. Now, let's move to trust an external identity provider to understand how I was able to authenticate in my SharePoint environment using my Facebook account. And for this purpose, I will use Windows Azure ACS, Access Control Services, which is an identity provider, that means a service which can authenticate a subject for someone else as a service, okay? And is a security token service because it provides security tokens to a relying party who wants to authenticate a subject. So if you are a user, you are a subject. The SharePoint engine can be assumed as the relying party. And the Windows Azure ACS is the identity provider and security token service because it authenticates users and releases security tokens describing the digital identity of authenticated users. ACS can authenticate users leveraging external identity providers. So it's a kind of a proxy, if you want. It can use its own list of users, but it can also, and usually it uses, an external set of providers, which can be the Microsoft Account Authentication Technique, also known as Windows Live ID in the past, as well as Facebook, as I showed you, Google, Yahoo, any WS Federation compliant identity provider. So ADFS, Windows Azure Active Directory, or any custom WS Federation of your own that you implemented by yourself. The interesting part of the story is that Windows Azure ACS is free. You simply need to have a Windows Azure valid subscription, and you will be able to create an ACS namespace, which is the name given to a configured instance of this service, and you will not have to pay anything else, okay? You simply need to add an Azure subscription, and it's great, I think. It supports a various and a rich set of specifications. For instance, it can talk protocols like WRAP, OAuth, WSTrust, and WS Federation. And WS Federation is the protocol that we will use with SharePoint. It supports also various kinds of tokens, again, SAML 1.1 or 2.0. We will use SAML 1.1 because it's the one supported by SharePoint. But also simple web token or JSON web token. So you can use it as an identity provider and as a security token service, not only for SharePoint, but also, for instance, for custom applications for Windows 8 or for any other device, leveraging, for instance, OAuth and JSON Web Token outside SharePoint and using WS Federation and Summer 1.1 in SharePoint. So it's really, really interesting. So go back to my environment, and let me show you how we can federate against Windows Azure Access and Control Services. Sorry, I need some fuel. Okay, so let me go to Windows Azure. This is the portal of Windows Azure, and I can access the management portal using my active account, which is this one. Let me log in using my Microsoft account. And here you will see the management portal of Windows Azure, from which I will be able to manage one or many of instances of Windows Azure Access Control Services. You will find ACS under this category, the Active Directory category. So we have to wait for a while to see my services ready. Usually it's just a while. Whenever you have a session based on an external service or connection, you're always scared every single minute because it will work the network, it will not work. Okay, it's coming. I have some website, and sooner or later, I will have also some Active Directory services. Trust me. But cross your fingers, just in case. Still thinking about it. It's not that complex. I have a few services. Okay, Active Directory. We have six services under the Active Directory folder. Okay, and as soon as the management portal will support me, I will show you how to configure. Okay, under the access control namespaces, you can see I have five configured access control services. The one I'm interested in is this one, SP2013 reference. I click on it, and I click on Manage. If you want to create a new one, you can simply click New, Access Control, Quick Create, which is the only option you have. You have to provide a name, which should be unique, and a region, let's say North Europe, and a subscription to join with your Access Control namespace. And you will be done. You will have to wait for a couple of minutes, and then you will have a management portal for your access control namespace. By clicking on the Manage button, you will be redirected to an external site, which is the management site for your access control namespace. And here you can see I have the capability to configure a set of identity providers, where an identity provider is any of the services I will use to authenticate my users. So, for instance, this is the ACS namespace I've used before in the previous demo to authenticate my user. And in fact, I have Facebook and Windows Live ID configured. And I will show you how to configure your own Facebook identity provider. Then there are the relying parties, which are the websites or the application you want to federate with the Windows Azure ACS. And then you have some rules you can define to translate claims from the external identity provider, let's say Facebook or Live ID, into the security token, which will be released for every single user when they will authenticate. So let's start from the identity providers. And let's say I want to create a new configuration for a Facebook identity provider. You just need to click Add to make a choice against the kind of authentication and identity provider you want to use, let's say Facebook, and you will have to provide some information to configure this new provider. Let's say it is another Facebook. You have to provide an application ID and an application secret, which are the information you will need to trust your ACS against Facebook. In order to have an application ID and an application secret, you will have to go to the Facebook side of the world, to developersfacebook.com, and you will have to create a new application for this purpose, a Facebook app, okay? I already have one under the apps. I have the SP 2013 reference app, which under its settings has an app ID, which is the value I have to copy and paste inside my ACS configuration, as well as the app secret. Of course, after this session, I will reset my one, so don't try to write it down. It's useless, okay? I change it every single day of my life. No, I'm kidding. Okay, and this is the secret. So using my application ID and using my application secret, I can federate with Facebook. But I have also to declare which kind of information I want to retrieve from Facebook when my user will log in. For instance, here, I declare only that I want the email address from Facebook, but there is a list of available keywords that I can declare separated by commas, and I can say I want the email, the friends list, and something like that. And as soon as my end user will authenticate with Facebook against my ACS, they will be prompted with a question. Do you trust this ACS? Do you want to provide your email, your list of friends, and so on to this identity provider? And it will be an option for the user to say yes or no, trust or not trust. Moreover, on the Facebook side, you will have to configure the website URL of the Windows Azure ACS, which will be the only site known by Facebook. So the interesting part of this story is that using a shared Windows Azure ACS, you can federate with Facebook multiple SharePoint sites without creating multiple apps. You simply need to federate one single app with Windows Azure, and then the tricky part of the story will be made by Windows Azure ACS, which will be a kind of proxy between you and Facebook. Moreover, I have to define if I want to use this identity provider with all of my relying parties or just with some of them. And I can click Save to save what I have done. Of course, I have already configured Facebook, and here is my configuration. This is the secret we have just seen. And here is my configuration. Then I have to configure the relying party, which is more interesting from the SharePoint viewpoint. In fact, SharePoint can be a relying party for AWS Federation service provider. But in order to configure, to federate a relying party with an identity provider, I have to provide some information, which can be the name, of course, of the relying party, but also how to reach the relying party and how the relying party will present itself against the identity provider. That means the realm of the identity provider, which is a URL, and the return URL in case of good or not good authentication. Moreover, I will have also to make a choice against the kind of token I will release to this relying party, and some other information about the lifetime of the token and about how the claims provided by ACS will be translated to be ready to be consumed by the external relying party. In the previous example, I've used this site. Let me show you the configuration. In SharePoint, you have to provide the URL of your SharePoint web application, followed by underscore trust, default aspix, which is the URL to use as the realm of your SharePoint web application. And you will have to create a relying party for each and every web application you will have to federate. Then you have to provide the return URL, which is the same as before, the token format, which has to be SAML 1.1, and eventually the encryption, but it needs some more configuration on the SharePoint side, as well as the token lifetime, which by default is 600, which is too less. Usually, it's not enough, and you can experience a bad experience. Re-authenticate it continuously your users, because every single time your user clicks something in the page, it will be prompted again to authenticate against ACS, and then again to the page, and then again to authenticate, and then again to the page. It's really boring. You should pump it up. For instance, this 3,600 means 1 hour, so you give 1 hour of lifetime to your token. You have to choose the identity providers you want to use, in my case, Facebook and Windows Live, and the set of rules to use. The rules are simply a set of information to define how the claims, how the information describing the digital identity of the end user will be mapped to claims when releasing a security token from ACS to SharePoint. Let me show you one rule, one set of rules. Here you can see I have a list of rules in this area of the screen. For instance, I have a rule that states every single time you get from Facebook as the identity provider a claim of type email address, then in the output place still an email address claim with a pass-through rule, so with the same value that is coming out from Facebook. So in reality, this rule means when you receive the email address from Facebook as a claim, use it as a claim email address against the SharePoint environment. But I can also say, for instance, that in case of Windows Live ID, for instance, where with Windows Live ID, I don't get back the email address of my user from Windows Live. It's sad but true. There is another technique to get access to the email address of an end user authenticated with Windows Live. I say, whenever the identity provider is Windows Live and there is a claim of type name identifier, please, in output, use an email address claim with the same value as before. So I simply translate the name identifier into an email, which is a fake email address, just for the purpose of having an email address in my user profile, and so on for all the claims available. Okay. As soon as you will have configured the identity provider, the relaying parties, and the rules, you are ready to federate SharePoint with ACS. How? You have the application integration link, which provides you a set of URLs. For instance, the WS Federation metadata URL is the one you should be interested in. Let me show you the result. Just a bunch of XML. Not that sexy, but could be. It depends on your opinion. But inside this XML file, you will find a very, very useful information, which is the X509 certificate that will be used by Windows Azure ACS to sign every single security token. And SharePoint will have to trust this certificate in order to trust the identities, the security tokens retrieved from ACS. So, we are IT guys. We need to copy and paste this value inside a file. We need to take this value, only this one, without the trailing tag. You have to copy this value inside a file. Let's say you want to copy it using Notepad or something like that. Okay? And you can save it, save as acscertificate.cer. This is the public part of a certificate. And you can save it as a .cer file. Using this file and using the passive requester endpoint address, which is this one, you have all the information you will need to federate SharePoint with this external identity provider. Let me show you how. Back to my SharePoint environment. You have to execute a bunch of PowerShell scripting. First of all, you have to load the PowerShell extensions for SharePoint. Then you will have to load the .cer file you saved before inside an X509 certificate 2 object of .NET framework. And you will have to trust from the SharePoint viewpoint that certificate. So you have to invoke the new SP trusted root authority, providing a name for that authority and the row certificate content. By doing that, you will trust the external identity provider. But you will have also to configure your target environment, your SharePoint environment, to support the identity provider. So let me show you how. First of all, keep in mind that inside the set of rules defining my identity provider,
there were a list of claims. There was a claim for the name identifier, a claim for the email address of the user, and a claim for the identity provider. Well, I have to define a map for each of them in order to say that for each claim I will get from the external identity provider, I want to map it to a claim inside the SharePoint world. And what I can see is a mapping with a translation or a direct mapping. Let me show you. Here I have a new SP claim type mapping where the incoming claim type is the name identifier provided by Windows Azure ACS with an incoming display name. And locally, on the SharePoint side, I want to have a username claim. So the name identifier from the ACS perspective will become a username from the SharePoint perspective. Moreover, the identity provider claim as well as the email address claim will be managed same as incoming. So they will be simply moved inside the SharePoint environment without any kind of translation. They will keep the same name and type and value. Lastly, I have to declare a couple of variables for the realm of my web application, which is the one I configured on the ACS side, if you remember. I have to define the passive redirector URL I underlined a few seconds ago on the ACS side, which is the URL that will be used to authenticate users in a passive mode, which means using a browser, using a web browser. And then I'm ready to create a new SP-trusted identity token issue, which will have a name and a description. But above all, we'll have a realm, which is the one we have just defined, which will have a certificate and a set of claim mappings, which will be the claims I've just defined, as well as a sign-in URL, the URL to log in with my external identity provider, and the identifier claim, which is my, which in my scenario is the email claim, is the map to claim type, which is the email claim. By executing this code, you will have the capability inside the SharePoint Central Administration under Manage Web Application, selecting a web application and selecting the authentication providers, you have the capability to choose your custom identity provider. First of all, let me underline that this web application, which is the one we have just used, is configured for anonymous access, as well as for Windows and FBA authentication. But we also have the trusted identity provider checkbox selected and two identity providers selected. This one is the one we have just discussed about. Okay? So, this is the way to configure a custom identity provider in SharePoint. But let me show you one last thing before coming back to the slide deck for a while. So far, we have configured and we have used SharePoint authenticating users in various kind of authentication techniques. But even if we have not yet talked about authorization, let me show you a funny or a strange thing that will happen. Let me add a policy for this web application. Let's say that I want to add a policy using the people picker, where I want to give some kind of permissions. Let's say I want to give full control over my web application to a specific user authenticated using, let's say, an external identity provider like Windows Azure ACS. Let's say I want to give full control to my Facebook user. Okay? It can happen. Okay? Let me try to look for the claim values I would like to retrieve from Windows Azure ACS. You know that my target account on the Facebook side is for a user called Paolo Pialorsi, which is my name, okay? So let me look for Paolo. Search. As you can see, I have a very long list of results, which includes
a user in my organization. That means a user in my local Windows Active Directory. But also, inside the SharePoint 2013 ACS folder, I have a matching for an email address. But Paolo is not an email address. For a name identifier, it could be. For an identity provider, there are no identity provider with name Paolo. What's happening? I will explain you in a few seconds what's happening. But it's a default but strange behavior of SharePoint whenever you configure an external custom identity provider. So, back to the slide deck to understand what's happening. Whenever you trust an external identity provider, you get back a set of claims, okay? Sometime you need to augment those claims. You want to add something custom, let's say my fidelity program level I showed you in the first demo. Sometime you want to support your IT pro users or your end users in searching for claim values to give authorization, permission, or something like that. Because you want to authorize your user based on their claims. And it's true, and it's common, okay? However, from an architectural perspective, in SharePoint, whenever you authenticate a user using the claims-based mode, under the cover, you leverage a so-called claim provider, which is a class, a .NET type. We have three claim providers available out of the box in SharePoint, and we can create custom claim provider of our own if we want. Well, the purpose of a claim provider is to provide claims augmentation, so to enrich the digital identity of an authenticated user with custom claim values retrieved from somewhere else, and to provide name resolution services, so to support the search engine, the one we have just used in the People Picker, for instance, to resolve username, and to give friendly values for claims and people. As I told you, out of the box, we have three kinds of claim provider. The SP Active Directory claim provider, which is the one supporting the Windows authentication infrastructure. So, in a claim-based world, whenever you authenticate a Windows user, the SP Active Directory claim provider will be in action to provide a rich set of claims to the STS of SharePoint. If you use the form-based authentication, there will be the SP Forms claim provider. And both these claim providers will also provide services not only for enriching the digital identity authenticated, but also for naming resolution. So they will greatly support you while searching for users and claim values, for instance, inside the People Picker. The third one is the ugly one, sorry, is the SP Trusted claim provider, which simply tries to search for anything everywhere. So whenever you provide a value to search for and you are using the SP Trusted claim provider, it simply assumes that what you are looking for is something that really exists on the other side and allows you to map the value you provide while searching for a specific claim value with any possible claim type you have. So when I wrote Paolo, the only behavior of this third claim provider was to allow me to choose between an email address, a name identifier, and an identity provider, leaving to me the role to define what I was looking for. And it's not that easy and not that useful for an end user who want to configure an authorization rule. So luckily, we can define a custom claim provider to change this behavior. A custom claim provider inherits, is a .NET type, inheriting from the SP claim provider abstract class available in the SharePoint object model under the microsoft.sharepoint.administration.claims namespace. And there you can find, inheriting from that type and implementing or overriding a bunch of methods available, you can create custom name resolution rules, custom claim augmentation rules, and so on. And this is the key feature you have to leverage in case you want to provide your end user a better user experience. In fact, if I go back in a few seconds to a demo, I will show you that using a custom claim provider, I will be able to better support my end user while searching for claims and claim values. But in order to create a custom claim provider, you have not only to create a class, you also need to create a solution, a farm level solution so far. So it is a solution that is suitable only for on-premises scenarios. You cannot use it on Office 365, of course, because you cannot deploy a farm level solution on a standard Office 365 subscription. And it leverages a dedicated feature receiver, which is inherited from this type, SP Claim Provider Feature Receiver, which allow you to configure your custom claim provider. And moreover, you will also need to execute a bunch of PowerShell scripting. So it's not that easy, but thanks to Steve Peschka, who is a very, very smart guy working in Redmond, we have a very rich and well-documented example, and so we can create our own claim provider starting from that example. Let me show you, again, a quick demo. It's a quick overview because I don't want to stress all the audience with a bunch of .NET code, which probably could be interesting for someone, but not for everybody. So, and even if you are a developer, it's not that sexy as a code. But let me show you the result before of the code. Let's say that I want to search for a specific set of users with a specific fidelity level. As I showed you, I had a couple of users with a gold fidelity level, and I had a user with a silver fidelity level. Let me search for gold. As you can see here in the tree view, I have a DevLib claim provider, which is a custom claim provider I created, which provides me a fidelity program level with a real matching for this value. And if I try to add this value, a tooltip will tell me that this is a gold value retrieved from the DevLib claim provider. So an end user searching for specific claim value can be supported by an enriched search interface where they will be driven to search the proper value. So let's say I want to search for the green fidelity program level. I don't have a green fidelity program level. I simply have a silver, a gold, and a bronze, if I'm not wrong. So let's say I want to search for the green, which is not available. I have green as a favorite color, but I don't have green as a fidelity program level. Let's see. So I can drive my user to search the proper values for the proper claims. OK, let me show you how very, very quickly. Is it the font size OK also in the back? Or not? Can you see it? OK, thank you. Let's start from the type declaration. This is a class, public class, inheriting from SP Claim Provider. Here I have to declare some information like the display name, the internal name, and so on, but are just descriptive information. Then I have to provide somewhere the set of values that can be assumed by my custom claims. So focus your attention on the fidelity program. My fidelity program claim has a custom claim type, which is this one, which is the one we saw in the first demo. Okay? This is the claim type. The claim values for the fidelity program level are bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Okay? Then I have a fill claims for entity, which is a method I can override to provide custom values for my user. So whenever a user is authenticated, SharePoint will call this method in my custom claim provider to enrich the digital identity of my users. And here I have the list of claims of my current user, as well as the current context and the current entity. And I can add custom claims, as like as I do here, where I add a new claim of type fidelity program with a random value in reality, and with a type, a value type of string.
I can also provide information about the claim types I want to support and the available values for these claim types. I can support the hierarchical view in the People Picker. I will not show you the details, but I can support, as you saw a few minutes ago, I can support the hierarchical view in the People Picker. But I can also support the searching, here it is, the searching for my claim values. So I simply need to override the methods I want to define to support the various capabilities of a claim provider. I need to declare that I want to provide the services I have implemented. So I have to declare, for instance, that I support entity information, I support hierarchy, I support search, and so on. And whenever you say, OK, I support searching, and you implement overriding the field search, the method, you will be able to provide a custom behavior for your custom claim provider. But in order to deploy the custom claim provider, you will have to create a farm level solution with a feature receiver, which will have to inherit from this type that I showed you on the slide, and which under the feature activated method will have to do some makeup for your custom claim provider. And lastly, you will have to configure the claim provider for your target web application or web applications, if many. So you will have to define the URL, the zone you want to extend with your custom claim provider. You will have to get the type under the cover of your custom claim provider and the web application that you want to extend. And using the settings of your application under the claim provider settings of the IIS settings of your application, you will be able to set for that web application, for that specific zone, a new custom claim provider. And you are done. And your user will be able to search easily, more easily, for claim values, and to provide authorizations to your end user based on custom claim values. OK. And from an app viewpoint, well, from an app viewpoint, in SharePoint, we have support for the OAuth protocol. Here you can see the official definition from the Internet Engineering Task Force. This is also the URL of the official document about OAuth 2.0. And the official description is the OAuth 2.0 authorization framework enables a third party to obtain a limited access, limited in time or limited about what it can access, to an HTTP service, which is a resource provider, either on behalf of a resource owner, so on behalf of someone who owns a resource, by orchestrating an approval interaction between the resource owner and the service, so the resource publisher, or by allowing the the third-party application to obtain access on its own behalf, so by itself. What does that mean? Let me make an example. Think about Facebook. I think everybody in this room has a Facebook account. Facebook is the service that provides some resources, for instance, the list of your friends, your pictures, your name, and so on, your status. You are the owner of those resources because you have your own profile on Facebook, you have your own pictures, your own friends on Facebook. Let's say you want to use an external app for Facebook. Well, whenever you try to use an external app for the first time, what will happen? It will be that Facebook will ask you to trust the external app, which is a third-party application in this description, to have access, limited, because you decide what you give access to an HTTP service, which is Facebook, which is the resource provider, on behalf of you. You are the user, the owner of the resources, or by itself,
in case the app can access those information by itself. And this is exactly what happens also when you use SharePoint. Because when you use SharePoint, as I show you in one of the last demos in this session, you give the trust, you give the permission to an app to have access to some information provided by SharePoint, and you are the owner of those information inside SharePoint. SharePoint is the HTTP service, and the app will be the third-party application which will have a limited access to those information. So whenever, in the context of an app scenario, SharePoint receives an authentication request, it will try to follow this flow diagram. Is the request provided with the set of user credentials? Yes. Well, is the endpoint accessed an endpoint of an app, website, or not? So it is the site running an app, or it is another SharePoint site. If the endpoint accessed is outside of an app, then SharePoint will set a user-only context. So it will give you the content and the resource requested only for the user context. If the request targets an app endpoint, a web app endpoint, the response will be executed and provided under the context of the app and the user. If the request does not contain a set of user credentials, but maybe it contains a no-out token, if it doesn't contain a no-out token, the request is anonymous, and so the context is for an anonymous request. If there is a no-out token inside the request, well, is it a request for a client-side object model endpoint or not? Because if it is not a client-side object model endpoint, it will remain an anonymous request, even if we have a no-out token. On the other side, if it is a request with a no-out token for an endpoint of a SISM request, if the request has also information about the user or not, it will determine the final result. If we have user information, the request will have a context with the user and app context. Otherwise, it will be an app-only context request. And whenever an end user, we, everybody of us, will be a subject requesting some content from a SharePoint server, including, for instance, a client part inside a page consuming some content from an external app server, let's say what will happen. The subject will request the content to SharePoint, which will use the STS or ACS under the cover of SharePoint and, in case of ACS, under the cover of Office 365, to retrieve a context token for that request for that user. And SharePoint will give back the page to the user, of course, if the user has the permission to access the page. Let's assume that that page includes an iframe, which can be a client part, consuming some content from an external SharePoint app. Well, the server running the SharePoint app will have the capability to refresh a token, to request an access token to the STS or ACS under the cover of SharePoint, in order to have access on behalf of the end user, of the subject, to some content inside SharePoint that will be used to produce the response for the end user. And providing a request using, for instance, the client-side object model and the access token, the SharePoint environment will be able to give back some information to the app, which will be able to provide content to the end user inside the frame. Okay? So far, we have seen how authentication works, which is the big part of the story. Authorization is, let me say, easier than authentication, or smaller than. From an authorization viewpoint, Every user or group inside SharePoint is in reality an SP principal, which is the base type of both these classes. And from a user and group perspective, it's almost the same as it was in SharePoint 2010. You can define user or group principals. As I told you, they inherit both from SP principal. You can give them explicit permissions, authorizations, to access a site, a web, a list or a library, and a specific item or folder. And the authorizations you give to a principal are based on a set of permission levels, where a permission level is made of a set of permissions. There are some out-of-the-box available permission levels. You see them listed here: read-only, limited access, edit, design, and full control. But you can also customize permission level, creating permission levels of your own. Because permission levels, under the cover, are made of permissions. And while the set of permission is predefined and based on a bit mask, the set of permission levels can be extended. You create a permission level, you assign permissions, so you configure the bitmask of that permission level, and you assign a permission level to a target principal. That's what happens when you use the web UI of SharePoint or when you use code. It's more clear when you use code because you use exactly types with that names inside their type definition. And from an app perspective, the story is quite different. Apps are not users. It's clear. And apps are granted permission all or nothing. When you create a custom SharePoint app, you define inside the app manifest of your app what are the permissions your app will need to properly run, to properly execute. And when a user who is allowed to install an app will install your app in a site, the user will have to trust the app and will have the opportunity to give all or nothing about those permissions. So if the user installing your app will trust your app, the app will have all the permission you declared inside the app manifest. Otherwise, your app will be not installed. Okay? All or nothing. Of course, a user can grant only permission that he has. So You cannot trust an app that wants more permissions than you have. And you need to be at least a site owner to install an app. After you trust an app, you cannot change the permission assigned. You can only remove the whole app and the data inside the app site. But you cannot change the permission after you install the app. Again, and moreover, when an app as an app website, which is a SharePoint-based site under the cover of the app, by default, the app will have full control over its own app web. It makes sense. It is a SharePoint site on which the app can place some content, some information for running. So it's okay to have full access on this website. But by default, the app will not have any kind of authorization against any other SharePoint site, unless you request for them using scopes and rights, and the user trusting your app will trust your app, providing the proper rights to your app. Permissions for apps are made of scopes. A scope can be the site collection, the website, a list, the tenant, but can be also a specific service, let's say the search engine, the management data service, and so on. The user profile for using the social features, and so on. Whenever you declare in an app manifest a scope, you have also to declare the right you want for that scope. So, for instance, if you are configuring a permission request to access the site collection, you will have to declare if you want a read-only access, a write, a manage, or a full control access to your site collection. And it's up to you, while defining the manifest of your app, to define such information. In case you are declaring also permission related not only to site, web, list, and so on, but also to services, search, management, data, and so on, the right could be different. For instance, when you request a permission for the search service, you have rights related to what you can search for, only for contents visible to the user running your app or for all the contents, for instance. It depends. And if, on the user perspective, from a user perspective, permission level are customizable, from the app perspective, scopes and rights so far are not customizable. So you can only define and use scopes and rights available out of the box. So let me show you one last demo about this topic. Let me reduce these windows and let me go back to my SharePoint environment. Let me log in, let's say as a Windows user. And here I am. Now I am a site collection administrator, so I can install an app, I can do whatever I want. Under the site settings, I can define people and groups, so I can give right to access my site collection to other users, and here I can search for them, leveraging also my custom clay provider. But I can also configure permissions. Here you can see, because my web application allows anonymous access, I can define anonymous access for this specific site collection. And in my case, I decided to have access to the entire website as an anonymous user, of course, as a read-only user. Here there is an option very interesting, because by clearing this one, you can give access to the read-only part of the client object model of the REST API provided by SharePoint also to anonymous users. So keep in mind this option, which is not available in Office 365, just for your information. And here I can define custom permission levels, which are made of a set of permission, as I told you. But as a user with the power to do that, I can also add an app to my site. And I can use the SharePoint store to add an app. Let me search for an app, for a free app, because I have no money in my pocket now, sorry. This one is my favorite. I use it in every demo. And as soon as I will add this app to my SharePoint site, I will have to trust it, as I told you. And this pop-up window will ask me to trust this app in order to read item in the site in which I'm installing the app and having basic access to my information. I trust it. And in a few seconds, the app will be installed in my site collection. Downloading. Installing. I said in a few seconds, so please, come on. It is a Web 2.0 UI, so it's Ajax-based, okay. And here you can see I have the app, I have some information about the app, and I have the permission I provided to the app when I trusted it. And the only option I have is to say, okay. It's enough. But I can remove this app. If I don't want to trust it anymore, I can remove it. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Okay, so this is the user experience from the site owner or site collection administrator perspective when using apps. So this is what we have when working with app permissions in our environment. One last thing I want to tell you is that there are situations where you don't want to leverage the OAuth and access control services in Office 365 when configuring apps. Well, if you are on premises,
only if you are on-premises, and only if you are creating a provider-hosted app, which is a specific kind of hosting you have for a SharePoint app. That means the hosting is on your charge. In SharePoint apps, you have SharePoint-hosted apps, auto-hosted app, and provider-hosted app. SharePoint-hosted run in SharePoint. Auto-hosted are available only in Office 365 and run on Windows Azure in a kind of auto-magic way. And provider-hosted apps are on your charge. You have to provide the hosting infrastructure by yourself, wherever you want, but you have to take care of it. Well, in case you are on-prem with a provider-hosted app, you can skip using OAuth and ACS, which is used by Office 365, and you can simply create a so-called server-to-server or IKE trust scenario, which is not a full trust. It's not a full trust solution. Don't misunderstand the words. IKE trust is not full trust. I will explain you in a few seconds. When you create an IKE trust app, when you configure an app as an IKE trust app, what you do is to provide an X509 certificate to your app, which will be used to identify your app and to trust your app from the SharePoint perspective, so that the app will be able to provide context token with user information defined by itself, regardless of the SharePoint side of the world. So that's why it's an IKE trust, because SharePoint trusts IKE, this external app, and trust the user information inside the context provided by the app. But it's not a full trust. You still have a set of permissions assigned to the app, so you can still configure permissions. In order to configure an IKE trust provider-hosted app in SharePoint, you need to be on-prem, as I told you, and you need to write some PowerShell code in order to trust the certificate and to trust the app against the SharePoint farm. You can find on the network many examples of how to define an IKE trust configuration, or you can find them also in my book in the chapter about apps and apps deployment. Okay, I think that's all. Here you can find some related contents or session that you can watch, probably at home offline. You can try to certificate, and I hope you will achieve the result with the SharePoint certification exams. You can find me later at the Microsoft booth until 3 p.m. because after that the booth will close and the expo will close. Take a look also at Channel 9, TechNet, MSDN, and the learning section of Microsoft. And please remember to evaluate this session using this QR code or using the website. That's all for me. Keep in mind my email address. If you need something, drop me an email and I will be happy to give you an answer. And if you have any question, I'm here to answer your question or to chat a little bit before lunch. Thank you so much. Hope you like it.